Hey, good evening, everybody. How's it
Good
going?
evening.
Hello.
Tonight we
Hello.
are joined by Matt Buxton from Video Game Perfection, who is here to talk about the OSSC. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Very early in the morning for you.
Yeah,
kind of 2 in the morning, but what the hey.
Yeah, I mean
You know.
we've been talking about this for a while, and like, well, it's pretty late at night or early in the morning, but I think it'd be a lot of fun. So thanks for staying up. Or did you nap at all today?
I can't nap. I just can't. If I nap, I'll sleep for like 30 minutes, wake up and feel sick. I'm just
Yeah, I'm the same
I'm
way.
totally not a napper.
I naps are on my bad list.
Yeah.
Give another 10 years maybe, but
Yeah, I always I can never do it because I always feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah, there's this just like sick feeling like the world has passed me by.
Well, so the OSSC episode is finally out after after like a ridiculous amount of talking about it and work. I can't believe that it finally
Yeah,
released at 9 o'clock at night on Friday.
I mean it's such a good feeling for that to finally be out there, 'cause we've had the prototype from Marks for more than a few months, and
Yeah, since I want to say like February, we've had it, so
oh
it's.
gosh, at least I think that's when we started talking to him. I mean, it's embarrassing. But we had just like so many things that were like high priority, and that was of course one of them too, but that one was the most intimidating.
Right.
There were so many things to learn about that, and not just that, we wanted to make like a comprehensive episode that was like showing a range of FrameMeister alternatives that people might be interested in. It took us a while to figure out what ones we wanted those to be, and for you to figure out what you needed to about those, and for us to understand what we needed to know about the OSSC. And I eventually realized, Matt is always big on the whole, DVD-O plus XRGB3 or now DVD-O plus OSSC. And I was like, oh, we got it. We're to really do the OSSC right, we're gonna have to talk about DVD-O, aren't we? So then we started looking for a DVD-O ledge to borrow, and then much later we found out we could borrow a VP50. So it went on and on and on, and then I had no vision for how the episode was going to come together, and then it finally, once I got like the OSSC and DVD-O stuff kind of figured out, I was like, and I wrote it, I was like, okay, I like have a I'm starting to feel like the vision for this episode and how it's going to be coming together. And so that was a big relief when that moment finally came, but it was a long time coming. It's definitely been the most intimidating episode that I have edited,
Yeah.
and the longest RGB episode by like 6 or 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, congrats for getting through it anyway.
Well, thank you for your assistance.
Yeah.
Anytime. It's good promotion for me, so I'm quite happy to do it.
Yeah, so explain that. I don't, personally, I don't understand all the details that well about how your relationship with the OSSC goes, but Marks, I would say his full name, but I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Marcus Hiankari
No,
or
that's
something
me.
like that. And he's the creator of the OSSC. It's an open source project, but he is at some point going to plans to release the information, but right now he's kind of keeping it close to the chest, and he's released his first creation of the OSSC project. And you are helping distribute that, and you've obviously got a pretty good web presence as videogameperfection.com, so you're already kind of known as a go-to source for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I found out about it first on the Shmups forum.
As I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, and I'd actually been saying for a while, I got my XRGB Mini, and honestly, I didn't seem to use it that much because I had the old XRGB 3
Oh, there it
there,
is.
and I looped that through into the DVDO or Devo or however they pronounce it, Edge. And I, you know, it's not quite as good because with the XRGB3, there's a lot of picture noise and there's other caveats as well. Like every scaler has problems. Mm-hmm. You talked about the snares being the problem with the OSSC. On the XRGB3, it tends to be PC Engine and Master System.
Oh, interesting.
So, anyway, I thought it would be great if they could come up with, like, a modern design for a line doubler, because line doublers are lag-free, so you can integrate them into any system. If you just need to get over the hump of how bad scaling is on a regular HDTV, it can do that for you, and most of them scale 480p fairly well.
Yeah.
If you're more, you know, more of an enthusiast who wants to make a really awesome system, you know, chain it through projectors or video processors or whatever, you can as well, and you don't have to worry about lag getting in the way of your final solution or whatever you come up with. So cool. I was interested right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I think Marcus sold the first 50 units himself, but because I already had a web store and I'd been supportive of the project all along, I was like, you know.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense.
And help with this, you know.
So are these, like, shipping to you? Are you, like, personally shipping these out, or are you keeping them stored in your house?
Yeah, basically. We got the first 100, and they just went straight away. They barely touched, you know. Barely got them out of the box, and then people were ordering them. So we got to a point where we were like, well, we need to order more to get the economies of scale, but, you know, it's such a lot of money for a small business. So we sort of went in half and half, and I sort of pleaded to family for a bit of a loan, and this is kind of my house deposit money that I bet on this now, so I hope
You know, from my perspective, it feels like the kind of thing that's just going to sell out instantly as soon as you put them up, at least for a while.
Well, yeah, I hope so. I mean, people are like, oh, why didn't you get more, you know, and this, I'm fed up of these projects. Like the N64 HDMI, we're always sold out of those. Mm-hmm. We just can't get them in. And people moan at, I can't his name now, who does the N64?
Marshall.
Marshall, right. People moan at Marshall because he's always, you know, slow to get new stock in. But these projects are done by people in their spare time a lot of the time. You know, they have to hold down jobs and family, and they don't have huge reserves of cash. So we're doing the best we can to keep the supply going, really.
Right. I saw something
about how, like, you just got a whole bunch in, though. Was that with you guys?
We've ordered 500, yeah.
Right.
500 units.
And that's a ton. I mean, you've been getting, like, I think 100 at a time up until now, right?
We got 100 in the first batch, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the waiting list has got to be, like, huge at this point.
Yeah, it's well over 1,000 people.
Okay, so you're...
I don't take any money up front because, you know, I don't like doing that. So mm-hmm. when it comes to it, a lot of people will be like, oh, I can't afford it at the moment or whatever. So, mm-hmm. But even so, I'm fairly confident that we'll sell out straight
to
the
end. Oh, yeah.
Isn't it crazy? I mean, you've been in this scene for a very long time. And is it just insane seeing, like, how much it's kind of picked up in the last several years? Like, the interest in so many different things? Like, how it's become so much more broad?
Maybe. What always amazes me is something like this, say, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, when the VP50 and the Edge were around. I mean, they were, like, high-end video processors. Mm-hmm. They were a luxury even for rich people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much you can do with a 50 Pro. It's kind of cool if you're a real videophile. You can do all sorts of, like, 24 to 48 frames a second conversion, that kind of thing. But they were so high end and so exclusive, and now people are building these in their bedrooms. It kind of blows your mind. Some that you've gone from, like, a super high end consumer electronics device to something someone can build in the room.
I mean, yeah, I mean, what, What amazed me when I got my hands on the DVD-O Edge was, here you've got this product that I think you could buy. Like, I know several people told me you could buy them on Amazon. I think you could also buy them on like a Best Buy. And here's the thing that has separate RCA plugs for RGB and sync. And it's like, it's like kind of wild to see that on a product that you could just walk into an American store and buy. That's just very
all the time in Europe. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny too, because stuff like that was probably for the most part just bought by like really rich lawyers or CEOs or something who just wanted a home theater, but they had absolutely no concept. They probably just hired someone to deck it out for them, but they probably had very little concept of the workings of the parts or what this was allowing, let alone if they would want to use it for video games,
Well, the Edge, to a lesser extent, was meant to be like a consumer one, mm-hmm. for sort of the high end, but still building it yourself. Whereas the 50 Pro really was meant to be installed by, you paid your several thousand, several hundred thousand pounds, and you got your home theater built, and they set it up and integrated it for you. So yeah, it definitely was aimed at that market.
Hello's World in the chat asks, why did older consoles tend to use weird refresh rates rather than regular ones? Do you have any insight on that, Matt?
My understanding of it is it just because they could get away with it. So you built the system and you had a certain clock for everything to keep in sync, like the CPU, the graphics chip, and what have you. And and if it was within tolerance, then, why, if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Right.
It's my understanding.
So you don't think it was because, like, the engineer of the Super Nintendo was like, ooh, if I had, if it was just this much out of spec, I could do this, like, really cool thing with it? Do you think it was just like...
Well, it depends on the game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, after enough tinkering, that's what the hardware was putting out, and they're like, yeah, this works, and they just went with it.
I think that's probably more how it is. I'll probably get, roasted on the forum tomorrow. Like, that's completely not the reason why that is, you fool.
I think it's really cool. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying, we always like to say, we only can say as much as we can on the show because we talk to a lot of people who understand it far more technically than we do.
Right.
And so that, you can kind of use that as your barrier a little bit, but a whole heck of a lot more than we do, that's for sure.
I don't know, you're catching me up.
You can't really see it. That's one of my favorite things about the OSSC is that you can always see the refresh on the front of the unit. And the way I have it set up, I can always kind of look at it to see what's going on.
Yeah, going back to the old XRGB3,
it was the same way in
that. I'll unbox it.
Am I right in, to be honest, I haven't read that much about the XRGB3, but am I right in understanding that it's kind of like almost like two units in one box, a line doubler, but it's also a scaler.
Yeah, it's kind of a halfway house. It had two sort of firmware slots, B0 and B1. And B0 was the full video processor, although it was very, very dated. You wouldn't really use it today. And B1 was the line doubler. But as you can see, there is no LCD. And with it being a line doubler, you could be tweaking settings and completely lose the picture. So that would be it. And the number of times I've had to reset this thing is
factory set on the front.
Well, I accidentally one time got my Framemeister set to PAL. And, the only way that I could get it back was to update the firmware, which, reverts it to 480p.
I think there's a settings reset on the FrameMaster as well.
Maybe. That was how I did it anyway. I'm sure there were other options. But yeah, that's really interesting to see that, the XRGB2, I think, was just like a... Just a
line doubler. Yeah, absolutely.
And XRGB3, that's just so interesting that it's basically two discrete two discrete devices in a single box, even though I guess it's probably not really marketed that way.
Yeah, they both sort of
the frame mice are just like, okay, we give you all the functionality in one box.
I'm going to go ahead and start really quick.
Yeah,
I just kind of want to give a little background to what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be playing with a straight up line doubled mode, and I'm going to be line doubling 240p content. And then after a little bit, I'm going to switch over to a side by side of 240 or line doubled versus 1080p on the FrameMeister at the same time. And then a little bit later, I'm going to switch over to the line triple mode, which scales it to 720p. And then I'm going to have that up full screen for a little bit. And then I'm going to switch over to that side by side.
Okay. You know, I think, you know, you captured for me that that shot of that comparison of Quackshot with, you know, 1080p FrameMeister versus line double OSSC versus line triple OSSC. And really, I think there's very little perceived difference between the line triple OSSC and the 1080p FrameMeister. Like, it's pretty crazy how good it is.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And lag-free, completely lag-free.
Yeah, it's insane. So the line quadruple mode, is he pretty confident in that actually that is going to work?
Interesting question. I was led to believe that line quadruple was out of the question because of bandwidth on the hardware.
Okay.
But then now he's saying, oh no, I think I can pull it off, and line quadruple will actually be a thing.
That'd be crazy, right?
Yeah, and who knows if any TV is going to accept the signal. You know?
Yeah, that
might have to wait for a screen to be invented just to display it.
So. Yeah, I mean, that would... But it would be, I mean, it would be 960p, which, I mean, we've already got 960p output available from the system, but only for 480p content.
Yeah, and that does have some compatibility problems as well.
Right. I was not able to get it working on my TV, but my TV also wouldn't even consider line triple mode anyway.
It's interesting. But... I mean, I think that Samsungs, which are like really usually good with 240p, like don't work very well with it. But I think the ones that are not good with 240p are the ones that will accept the line triple mode.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. I went over to some friend's house, and they have a Vizio and a Toshiba, and both of them, I would say the Toshiba is like 8 years old, if I had my best guess, and the Vizio is probably like 5 or 6 years old, and both of them played SNES in line triple mode perfectly. That was the pilot wings shot in the video is off of the Toshiba, most of the other line triple stuff that is off screen shots in the video is the Vizio. Like, I really like that sequence of Street Fighter 2 stuff. It's got like the close ups with the scan lines of Cammy and Ryu. I thought those just like looked really awesome. And they worked on that without any issue at all. By the way, what system is Fancy Zone 2? Is it Genesis?
Okay, so I am playing the it's the PS2 version, the Japanese PS2 version. There's
still can't see Corey.
What's that?
I still can't see you.
Right, because I'm actually like in the corner there. But if you go to the are you on the you should go to the page. The actual,
are you not on
I don't
the
know. I meant
page?
To send it to him earlier and I totally forgot.
Okay.
Then you can like see what I'm playing and see what's going on.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Here, I'll drop it in Skype here for you.
What I'm playing is the in the Japanese version of the Fantasy Zone Collection, which is like M2 compilation, they took and ported an original version of Fantasy Zone 2, which I believe was Master System only, and ported it to the System 16 hardware. System 16 arcade hardware, and put it on this disc. And it like works if you have like a board and everything. It would work. It's
wow.
Accurate. And this is the version they released as a 3D classic on the 3DS.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah. So I mean, and it has a 240p mode and everything. That's why like I'm playing it now, because I think that we always talked about Fantasy Zone because we think about that shot on Hazard City that was like the Fantasy Zone shot that was like, wow.
Yeah, I had no idea what it was until you captured some stuff from this game for the video, and I was like, oh, he's always like showing like the heads up display and the scan lines and stuff on Hazard City.
Right.
That's why he uses it, because of the way you can sort of switch it between the modes.
Yeah, it's actually really good. I can actually go switch back and forth between 240p and 480i with this if you wanted me to. Let me just see if I can. I mean, that's one of the big strengths. The mode switching works really well, like with my capture card, between 480i and 240p. But if when I line triple mode things, it really takes a while for it to sync. Just so you know, like when I switch to line triple, it just kind of sits for a little bit until it can sync up. Probably takes about like 30 seconds or so.
You know, I remember Matt, you commented to me that I said written in the script that with the DVD-O, I was getting it was still pretty bad, but I was getting a faster 240p 480i switch than with just the OSSC by itself. And I kept that line in the script until like the very last day of editing, and because that was when I was finally getting the shots of how long it took to do a 480i 240p switch on the OSSC. And it was actually doing really good. And I was like, what the heck? What was different? Like, I couldn't figure out why I was doing really good. And I'm like, well, I can't keep that line anymore, because now, like, the shot that I was using of the switch with the OSSC plus DVD-O, like, was clearly a lot worse than... But it was still, you know, like, the Silent Hill wait is really bad. But in Chrono Cross, it was really fast going back from... the interlaced menu to the gameplay was pretty fast. Like, you were just missing like a second and a half or maybe 2 seconds going into the menu on Chrono Cross.
So if you see, like, you can, for the people in the chat, like, you can see me switch back and forth. Okay, so I'm in 480i right now, and I'm switching to 240p. It's like instantaneous, pretty much, on stream. They'll see it happen.
In your video, you talked about the cheapy HDMI to SCART converter.
The generic one.
Yeah. And you said, oh, this handles the transitions really well. It's one of the best at handling them. I think the reason for that is it unlocks the frame rate. So it comes in at 59 point whatever, always goes out at 59.94. So when you're switching between 480i and 240p, it's not changing frame rate at all on the display. So the display doesn't resync.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Can that cause screen stuttering?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And how bad that is will depend on how far off you are from the 59.94 spec. If you on the DVD-Os, you can unlock the frame rate as well. It's buried in the advanced settings on the Edge and somewhere on the 50 Pro as well, but you can do it, and that does sometimes improve the transition times, as the trade-off being obviously you might get a little hiccup in the picture or something.
Yeah, I remember you made that comment, and there was something as I was finishing up with the DVD-O. There was something I really wanted to capture, and for some reason I want to say my capture card wouldn't do it, or I forget what it was. There was an issue syncing up somehow, and changing that option did make it work correctly.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of the capture cards are less tolerant than even like your HDTV to that sort of thing. But yeah. It all depends on which capture card you've got, I think.
Yeah, basically the short answer is if you want a capture card that works with the OSSC, you need the PEX HD cap.
Right, which is it's like the US version of the Micomsoft card.
Yeah, the X capture.
Yeah. Or the PEX HD cap, I don't think it's an X capture.
That's the PCI one, isn't it? PCI right. Express. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one we knew about because of you.
Yeah, I've had some sources not work on that.
But you did like a big walkthrough and stuff.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty cool card.
Yeah, I actually bought it before I had my Frame Meister.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is feed through another video processor as well to get whatever resolution you want. But obviously, then it gets more complicated and more expensive. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, we both went straight from using the Blackmagic.
Yeah.
To, you know, which is a very picky card.
Well, it's just perfectly in spec.
Which is not, yeah.
I understand why it needs to be like that, but it's not good for what we needed to use it for.
Yeah.
I have no idea how I've, like, not lost a life yet.
Because you're playing on the OSSC and it's so fast.
Yeah, that's so lag. Nice. Checks in the post, guys. Checks in the post.
We were kind of talking before the chat. I don't think I talked about this yet. Oh, I just died now. about how, like, doing this, like, working with Matt on this was kind of a big, like, kind of brought things. And the people that we worked with on this episode, with, like, fact-checking and everything like that, like, kind of brought things kind of full circle for us.
Yeah, because, you know, like, Hazard City, Video Game Perfection, those are, like, the sites that we were, like, drooling over when we were, like, looking at all this scalar stuff, being like, is this even real? Like, I had a hard time believing that you could make a signal from an actual console look like that.
Yeah, it's good fun. It gets addictive as well. It's like,
definitely
drop a couple of hundred just to try it out, you know. But you have to draw the line somewhere, I suppose.
Do you?
Unless your name's Tobias and you run Hazard City.
Yeah, seriously, like he is
never
like...
stop.
Yeah, I seriously don't think I'm really exaggerating what I say in the video. He's probably tried more scalers than anyone else on the planet.
Yeah.
Because it's just like that. Like, that was why I did, like, that shot that I recorded in OBS where it's, like, scrolling down the Hazard City site. Because he's got most of it on, like, just one long, long, long web page.
Yeah.
And I see, like, what I did was I took, you know, I took my trackball, you know, I did the little like center wheel click where you get that little scroll thing and then you like move your mouse like just a little bit to the side and it does like a continuous scroll speed. So I had that scrolling like really slowly to get that, and I was recording for like 9 minutes scrolling down the page, and then, you know, I do those speed ups where it like dashes down the page, but I was still only on like the XRGB3 section. I'm like, okay, I'm not recording anymore, but there was still so much more of the page. I'm just recording 9 minutes in OBS and just scrolling down the page.
It did promise like 2 years ago, I think it was, to reorganize it all. So they're coming soon, reorganization.
I got a scare in the middle of editing the episode because I needed to reference something or get another screenshot of his side or something. When I went to Hazard City, I accidentally clicked on the scan lines demystified instead of the deinterlacing link.
Right.
And I was like, well, this looks different. Did he, like, literally just change this? And I'm like, but I need the old site.
Right, because he goes into converting from sort of HD to 240p and SD as well, doesn't he? With things like the Extronic OSHA and, right. and hardware like that.
It's crazy.
Which is another step for hopefully there will be one day an open source DAM converter as well for people who want to do that. It shouldn't be that difficult to go backwards, if you like, from what we've got now.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the side-by-side right now. Like
the
kind of thing that we've talked about the whole time is that the color on the OSSC is just so much better.
Like, looking at it on the stream, it looks basically identical to my eye right now.
Well, I think the greens are, like, I mean, it's, like, darker. Like, it's...
Yeah, certain greens, if you look in the video, there's a Monster World 4 comparison. I was originally going to use it for a color comparison, but then I was like, maybe I don't know if you can see the color difference that well, but where you really can see the difference is there is a the floor has some green in the pattern, and the green looks so much better on the OSSC. That's what's most noticeable. Certain greens, anyway. Super Mario World is a common game for people to sort of do color tests with, because those bushes have relatively flat shading. They're a very bright green, and sometimes depending on especially with some default settings on the FrameMeister, they have what people have called an atomic green.
Yeah, or radioactive green.
Yeah,
right,
but
right.
The side-by-side looks really close here, and we're using profiles from the Pixel Purist, who has gone to pretty great lengths to do what he can within the FrameMeister to make those colors as accurate as possible. But the FrameMeister, as we understand it, is going through a number of RGB and YCBCR color space conversions. Like, there's like redundant conversions, and you're losing a little bit of something in the translation. I don't know if that's what causes the noise or what, but apparently there's like a few things that's like, why did they even do it this way?
Well, the reason, I think, is because it's based on consumer hardware and scalers, so that part of it was designed for video rather than pure RGB content. So rather than design their own scaler from scratch, they just used like an off-the-shelf part for most of it, and they sort of tailored it to their requirements. The other thing is, as well, your capture card may be doing color space conversion here, and YouTube might be doing a color space conversion.
Yeah,
YouTube
is probably compressing it quite a bit. I have noticed... to be honest, I haven't actually looked at some of the comparisons since we uploaded the video. I haven't looked at them on YouTube itself. But, like, I remember some videos, like, I was like, that color looks way too, like, washed. Not washed out, but, like, certain things, I was like, that looks like certain colors would look blown out a bit. And I would bring up, like, the video
file. But you can definitely see it on this level. You can see it, like, the pinks for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can see on the FrameMeister they look a little more purple.
Right.
Yeah, it's more noticeable on this level, I think. And when you paused it and went to the system menu, the blue looked a lot deeper on the OSSC. But I I forget where I was going with that, but yeah, like that was sort of something that struck me at first. And at first, you thought that the color on the OSSC, like when you got your unit, you were like, I think the color is kind of bad. It's too dark. And the reason was because in your PEX HD cap, you accidentally had some.
Well, the new
enhanced...
firmware, or not the first, the new driver set has like a bunch, like has a enhanced color space option, and it makes everything like really contrasty and like the dark, like everything too dark.
Yeah,
so I had to like recapture a whole bunch of stuff for you because it was not correct.
It was because I was like, something is wrong with this.
Yeah, because we get then you capture something from yours, and I like went into my options and stuff, and I was like, oh, there, that's got to be it, because it's the enhanced setting. There's like a limited, like a full and limited color space, and then there's the enhanced, which
I felt like I was really annoying you because I was like, spending all night like trying to convince you that your captures look wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think the PEX can do RGB either. Kind of, it can't capture directly RGB.
Well, I'm doing DVI directly.
You have to do you have to do a color space conversion, but.
Now, I was really confused when someone was explaining to me, and it might have been Fudo.
Right there, you can see it. That's see what you're seeing right now. That's how long it takes for it went from a 240p to a 480i setting. So you'll see the frameizer taking a while to go back to the title screen. You can definitely see how fast it is. Like watch right now, you'll be able to see it.
Yeah, this is 240p. I just saw it happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Framemeister that's 1080p directly into the AverMedia Extreme Cap, right?
Right. But you'll see. Okay, so I'm gonna go back to the title screen, which is 480i, and the game content is 240p. So you'll be able to see it. Like you'll see it show up on one, and then take a while. You know, it's like a good like 3-5 seconds probably. Which in some games that can, like Silent Hill, that can kill you.
Like I played Silent Hill for the first time. I want to say it was last October, and you know I had every intention of playing that on through the Framemeister off of my PS1, and you know just a few minutes into it, I was like,
right.
Something's wrong. So I ended up playing through it on my PS3 instead, which was, a little disappointing, but hey, at least I got to play it. It was a good game. I liked it.
I see some people saying in the chat that the OSSC, that the 480i content looks like it's kind of jittery. That's because it uses a Bob deinterlacer, which is quickly moving the image up and down, right?
Yeah, you basically
like by one line.
Line doubling each alternate frame, yeah. With the interlacing, you can't have good looking and low lag. You've got to choose one or the other, basically. That's why we've got the pass through mode
and
the unit, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Because TVs will always choose slow but nice, whereas for gamers, you want to sometimes have fast but slightly jittery.
What I thought was interesting, and I don't have an HDMI GameCube in my possession to go back and take a second look. That was my first exposure, my first in-person exposure to the Bob style deinterlace. But I want to say like the OSSCs looked a little more appealing to my eye than the GameCube. Is there a difference in how the effect is achieved in the two devices, or am I just remembering kind of wrong?
Well, my HDMI GameCube's still not here as well. We're trying to finalize the new mod for that actually.
Right.
But I think there is a slight difference. Did you try the deinterlace on the Edge?
I don't know if I had like a particularly a game mode on it. I noticed that on the Edge it was a little flickery. It wasn't quite like the Framemeister or quite like my TV. There was a little flicker, but it was like it also didn't look like the OSS. It looked like somewhere in between.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's Anchor Bay Tech. They made a deinterlacing mode for games that was sort of a little bit in between the two. And you can sort of shift the lines closer to each other to try and minimize the flickering. Yeah, it depends what you want to achieve. Mm. Like you said, I think in the screencast, in the video, this actually does look like it looks on a CRT because there is always that slight flicker.
Yeah. It the effect is really interesting on the OSSC, looking at the menu and Chrono Cross, because you've got what do they call it? The skill allocation slots or whatever they're called. They show up as little green spots on next to each character's stats. They're really small, and I always remember like when I first played Chrono Cross. back in the day, like, I always, like, was like, why is the menu, like, flickering? You know, I didn't, like, you know, I had seen that kind of thing on, you know.
Switch games. You guys keep on talking. I miss Switch.
You know, I'd seen that sort of thing on TV broadcasts, but I wasn't used to seeing that in games. And I just thought that, like, I didn't know, like, the difference. I didn't know that games ran at a progressive resolution or anything like that. So I was like, this is weird. Why is there this flicker in the menu? But you, especially in those little tiny green slots on the menu, you can really see that flicker. And it's so interesting seeing it actually happen on your HDTV with the OSSC. But I think that's one of the more extreme examples of noticeable flicker. Like, you know, there's a shot of Wild Arms 3 in the video.
And you never had Amigas over there then?
No.
See, the Amiga was my desktop computer for a long time, and I only had a TV set, and Workbench was like the Windows on the Amiga, and you could put that into Interlace, and that would flicker like nobody's business. So you'd be trying to do your homework.
Yeah.
And you could either choose between 240p, which is like postage stamp size for trying to write an essay, or 480i, and that really would flicker. In fact, the first line doublers that I knew about were specifically for the Amiga, and they used to call them flicker fixers.
That's funny. Yeah. You know, it is kind of funny because I've been thinking about how, in some ways, I've been into this for longer than I think. Because I still have it. Actually, the shot in the video, where I'm talking about like the different inputs on things, the shot in the video that shows an RGB port is actually the RGB, the VGA pass through for my computer, and this scalar box that I bought back in 2002 before I went to college, and it's got S video port and composite port. It has a PC pass through, and I bought it so that I could play my game consoles on my CRT PC computer monitor when I went to college without having to bring a TV. And you know, I would love, it would be so weird going back and using that box because you know, at the time I thought this was awesome because up to that point I had only had RF. Like, all my systems were routed through my VCR. I only had TVs that had had RF input, and so this was like my first exposure to S-video. I think that's why I'm not that like obsessive about scan lines, because I had crappy TVs with RF, and you know, all the colors kind of bled together, so I didn't really get that strong scan line appearance. And then I went straight to S-video on a scalar box that went to a VGA monitor, and I saw these, you know, pixels when I hooked up my Super Nintendo, and I was like, you know, like, so I like kind of had this weird jump, you know, from RF to a S-video to VGA scalar box.
For the people...
none of us had PVMs, did we, when we were kids? I mean, really.
I did have
SCART for my Amiga, RGB SCART, but I was always brought up that consoles were... No, you don't have consoles, you have computers. Why do you want a console? Computers play games. So I went C64 and then Amiga. But for C64, I never had anything other than RF. Mm-hmm.
So Castlevania Symphony of the Night is a game that I see people every once in a while talk about with the 480i 240p switches, and I've never run across that, but then people were saying it's the menu,
right?
And I was like, well, you know, I guess it is entirely possible, and all the time that I've spent capturing footage of this game,
the beginning. You always capture the beginning. I do.
I normally capture the beginning. I have loaded up a file and got some mid-game stuff, but I usually capture the beginning. So I've never done a full replay of it on the Framemeister, And
I should note that this is the first game that I played, the US version was the first game that I played on my OSSC. It was just the first one I grabbed.
Wow, how are you running like that? I've never ran like that.
It's just
Richter in this.
Double tap forward.
Really?
Yeah, it's like you don't know that?
You have to unlock it, don't you?
What's that?
You have to unlock that, don't you?
No.
The double tap thing?
It's just
it's been a while.
The reason Tri doesn't know about it is because he's always used R button as dash in Mega Man X, and I always use double tap to dash.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of games that I've played that use double tap dash, like Kirby and all.
That's true.
It's not like double tap is... I mean, there's Castlevania games with double tap. Off top of my head, Circle of the Moon does double tap. But I had no idea Richter could do this. Alucard can't do that, can he?
No.
Does the back dash thing, isn't he?
Yeah.
Does Alucard have a back dash?
Yeah.
Really?
I like the voice. The voice acting's great.
Is it like really deep, that really deep, angry Japanese voice?
It is. As if only we had Game Dave here to do his.
Yeah, that's that impression. Stock Game Dave. voice. I can see this game, I think, perhaps because it's kind of a bit of a darker sort of game than Fantasy Zone. I can sort of see the richer colors on the OSSC a little more clearly here.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I would say if anyone notices any lag difference, you know, in the two windows, I would say that wouldn't really be a fair comparison because you're capturing them to completely different capture cards.
Right.
So
yeah, it's the only way to do this correctly.
Yeah, that wouldn't be an entirely reliable method right now.
One of the versions of this game has its menus in 480i.
We think it's this one.
Well, I don't know, because like I say, I've never run across the issue. I have a hard time believing that in all my years of capturing footage from this game, that I've never paused it. But people do bring it up as one of those games. I mean, I can visualize the menu in my head. I'm like, that wouldn't be a 480i menu, would it? Like, it's like kind of pixely looking in my memory.
This is the PlayStation on the Saturn.
This is PlayStation.
Right.
Saturn, you know, is apparently really butchered in terms of optimization.
Yeah, it wasn't a great port.
For a long time, I assumed it was the definitive version because it's got like an extra character you can play as Maria.
And normally the Saturn's great for like your 2D.
Yeah, yeah.
Save your strength. Now what she says, Richter, save your strength or something like that.
Something like that. This is just a good game for easy capture because it's just got this like really cool opening.
Yeah.
You know, if you need, and two, like there's not a lot of good go-to PS1 games that I have that are like, you know, because when you're capturing something for a video, like, I mean, on one hand, yeah, it's good to have like some general type of stuff, you know, show some 3D games, show some 2D games, but when you're making a video and stuff is always on the move, I feel like when you want to illustrate something, you need to pick something that's got a bold, clean look. And you know, typically that's 2D games where you can easily tell the difference between two things. You know, in a 3D game, if I was to do a scalar comparison between two 3D PlayStation games, you might not see the difference as clearly as you would if I showed a 2D game. And I feel like, you know, I just got Mega Man 8 at too many games, and I feel like that's going that game is now going to become overused because it's a two and one more 2D PlayStation game on my shelf that I can go to and grab footage from. I played through it before on the anniversary collection. I need to actually play through it on my PlayStation, so I've got a save file that so I can record stuff other than just the beginning of the game. Because that game is like three times in the new video. But I prefer the look of Mega Man 7 myself to Mega Man 8, but Mega Man 8 does have a good look. You know, it's good to show PlayStation games. I've got demo disc. The person who gave me my Saturn had a Rayman demo disc, and that's where the Rayman.
I really want the first Rayman. I've like passed by it so many times, but I really want it.
Don't do it. It is so frustrating.
That's probably the thing that's held me back from getting it more than anything is that a lot of people said it gets really hard.
Yeah.
So the Japanese version of the menu is not. The Japanese version of the menu is 240p. I can confirm it right now.
It's the Saturn version then.
How long have you had this?
Only a couple. The Japanese version, not very long. Yeah. Maybe like a month.
I bought it for my friend Joey.
I got the game like the U.S. version like when it came out, but and you know I haven't played all the way through it since then.
I have not played all the way through it since I got it, which I probably got it around 2000. I probably got around 2000, 2001, and I only played through the whole thing one time too. I feel really bad about it.
Yeah, I feel like I need to.
I don't think I've really played through any of the Metroidvania, if you want to call them that. Some people don't like that term. I kind of like that term. I feel like it does a good job of describing what it is. I don't think I've ever replayed, like, done a full replay of a Metroidvania-style Castlevania. I want to say I played through Julius mode in Dawn of Sorrow, but that, like, plays so differently, and it's like a much quicker way to play through the game, so I kind of don't think that quite counts, but
I played the Xbox port of this, so nice work.
Oh, original Xbox.
No, the 360.
No, Xbox 360. Because I was going to say, I didn't think. I was thinking, how is that version? I've never played it.
It's pretty good. They managed not to butcher it. So.
I want to say, if I remember right, I want to say I saw a speed run done, you know, one of the big games done quick marathons. It was the 360 version, if I'm not mistaken. So. There must be some pros to using the 360 version, at least from a speedrunning perspective.
Yeah, and I find it all right, but then I haven't really got anything to compare it to because I don't have my PlayStation. So.
I see somebody in the chat said it looked like the that the card is capturing it at a limited range. My capture card is set to
full range.
Yeah, at the full range.
And the difference does look more extreme here.
I'm so used to like the not used to the circle confirm.
Oh yeah, yeah. When you got that PlayStation controller in your hands.
Yeah.
I was stubborn about sticking with circle confirm as long as the game would let me make have that option, you know, back in the PlayStation days, but then I finally had to succumb to it in the PS2 days.
Yeah, I mean,
Helicarrier's cape animation is like so good.
Yeah, I really need to replay this.
It's not even that long.
This was the third PlayStation game I got. So my first three PlayStation 1 games were Wild Arms, Final Fantasy VII, and then this. It's pretty good. First three games.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I got Final Fantasy VII with mine. I can't remember what I got after that.
Destruction
Derby 2, I think.
Oh. They would go on to make Driver. Reflections, I think, is the people who made Destruction Derby.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get my PlayStation until... I want to say either 99 or early 2000, possibly. I borrowed it, and already played through like Final Fantasy VII on a friend's PlayStation. But I finally conceded to buying a system that was made by someone that wasn't Nintendo. But it took me a while to get to that point, but I finally did, because I started getting into RPGs. I'm like, well, I'd already played through a lot of the good ones on Super Nintendo, going and getting into RPGs. Well, I've got a Super Nintendo, I can do that. But if I want to play new ones, I need to have a PlayStation. In Europe, I know Europe's sort of early days trajectory, I don't know if trajectory is the word, but the way that Europe kind of picked up on certain systems was quite a bit different from how North America did. The NES wasn't really all that huge, I don't think. And then I don't really know how Sega fared, but then like Super Nintendo and all that was pretty big. And PlayStation, as I understand it, has been a strong mainstay in Europe, ever since, I guess.
Yeah, the way I remember it, the NES was about. I remember when I saw the NES on TV as a kid, and it had the Rob Robot and I just freaked out. We've got to have one of these. We've got to have one of these. But at the time, like the UK had this huge computer industry. Like,
yeah, the computers. Computers just took over everything for so long there, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah, and
Commodore,
a lot of Commodore, Spectrum, Amstrad, Acorn,
Amiga.
Amiga, yeah. I mean, Amiga was an American computer, but it was huge in Europe.
Yeah. And that kind of stuff like was not a major game thing here.
Whereas for us, it was like the third system after SNES and Mega Drive. So, we got the situation where parents would buy their kids computers rather than consoles. So that kept the NES from being as big. Yeah. But then we never really did much work on them because they were so primitive that you couldn't really do much with it. I'm trying to use this diary app on the Acorn. It's like, I can just write this on paper quicker.
It's just like, my dad had been talked into, I think it was even before he met my mom, that someone at work said, you need to get this Commodore VIC-20 computer thing, And so I had that, and he had a Space Invaders knockoff game cartridge for it, and then there were like a few other games that were on like a audio cassette data reader.
Yeah.
And, it was a computer, but I never had that great of a concept of what you could do with it as a productivity tool. I always thought it was neat to look at and play around with, but. The thought of my dad actually like legitimately using something like that just kind of seems laughable, because I just can't imagine it. And then we never had like a real computer until 97.
Yeah, it was really the Amiga that I sparked my interest in computers as productivity, whereas with the 64 and I tended to play more of just the games, to be honest.
Yeah, like computers for me have always been like, you know, a productivity tool, you know, or a creative tool rather than a game machine, even though I have definitely dabbled in it at times. But PlayStation over there, like, did it pick up pretty fast from launch, or did it take longer to kind of get it established?
Yeah, it was a huge thing here as everywhere, I think. And they just got the marketing pretty much spot on.
Because, I guess I didn't realize how firmly established the PlayStation brand became in Europe until I was reading about how, and I don't know if the UK is necessarily the same as other European countries. I remember someone I follow on Twitter lives in the Netherlands, I think, and said that they're, you know, when
That's
Skyrim
sure
came
triple
out.
Triple mode for this.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Said that they worked at a game store, I think, in the Netherlands, and said that when Skyrim came out, like, you know, they felt so bad because almost everything they were selling was the PS3 version, because that's the system that people had.
But here it was, I'd say the Xbox 360 was more popular that generation.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that's just what my friends bought, but that was kind of strange. Around that time, everyone switched from PC to Xbox 360 on my friends list, and it was brilliant because everyone had the same online gaming system. But then when we went to PS4, that's probably good.
He's trying to summon the PEX HD cap to sync with the.
Oh, I see.
There it goes.
There we go.
It takes like 30 seconds, you say.
Yeah, it's just the way that. But it's like instantaneous. On my LG, yeah. It's just, you know, it's just for some reason. It takes a while.
Where was it? Yeah, then we got to Xbox One, and everyone sort of scattered again. Some people went to PS4, some people went to PC. And now my friends list is all over the place. I haven't even bothered with the PS4 Plus, just because so many of my friends are on Steam now, maybe I should give it a go.
Oh, I mean, they haven't announced the new one yet. That's gonna
Neo.
Be
Neo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably going to be September 7th, I think, is what we think. Which is, it's so interesting because the architecture of everything is like on the same page now. Except it sounds like Nintendo is probably partnering with NVIDIA, I think. So there might be some slight more. Well, there definitely will be a difference if the rumors for how we are NX's architecture is set up. But it'll probably still relatively be able to play a lot of the same games without a lot of tweaking, if I had my best guess. But
right.
I'm no expert on that. You know, it was a long time before I noticed that the CD thing and the corridor between areas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was pretty funny.
So, Matt, what do you feel like is in store for the OSSC? Like, what are some things that are being... Is there like, any particular, like, feature things you could give us a sneak preview of?
Funny you should say that. Hang on, I need to get to my notes. I need to take YouTube out of full screen. Yeah, what Mox has been working on at the moment...
Is that, like... That's not his full-time job working on this, though. Or is it his full-time job right now?
No, I don't believe it is. It's more of a hobby project for him.
Right, because he's just, like... He's an electrical engineer, right?
Yeah. But they have weird VAT laws over there, so he has to actually register as a business.
Oh, wow.
Just if he's not like two or three, so technically he is a business, but technically he's employed by someone else. But yeah, he's started to implement the advanced timing tweaker.
Which means what exactly?
In a nutshell, you can change timings and output resolutions to taste. So, I mean, talking of esoteric computers, the Atari ST, you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Don't know anything about it, but I know the name.
That's got like a crazy high-res mode that's monochrome or something, but it uses like a really weird resolution. So you can go into the advanced timing tweaker and actually change your sampling rate for the scan line so that you eliminate or minimize sort of jitter, because it's trying not then trying to cram the signal into a standard line double.
Now, would that have anything to do with like fixing like the Super Nintendo type issue, or is that sort of another thing?
Yeah, we've made some progress on that, or Mark says I should say. We've got some new settings that have improved the Super Nintendo on certain TVs, but haven't made a big difference on others yet. So we're still experimenting with that. The other cool thing is the back porch control, which lets you shift the image left, right, up or down.
Okay. Now,
like, again, it's sort of not supposed to do that according to the spec of HDMI, so some TVs might reject it, but I know my friends... Yeah, you don't have to use it, exactly. One of my friends, Panasonic, the image was shifted sort of massively to the right when we used it, so it would have been great for that. You could just bring it back into the center. And there's even sort of a kind of a zoom thing that you can do.
On the OSSC?
Yeah, you can change the horizontal active area. Can be used for zooming aspect correction.
Oh, okay, because I noticed on, going into line triple mode, in certain systems, like, things were shifted upwards a bit. Not off-screen, but there's a lot more space on the bottom than there is on the top.
Yeah, so with the back porch control, you'll be able to correct for that, if assuming your display will tolerate it.
But nice. but do you think a full-blown zoom option would at all be in the cards?
Probably not. That's probably not what he means by that, because there's no frame buffer, so you can't really zoom the whole.
Right. You know, something that interested me, little tidbit that Fudo explained to us was that, you know, about the dual processor design of the FrameMeister. And he said that the zooming portion of the FrameMeister is done on the FPGA, and that the secondary chip is primarily for, like, the primary reason it even exists is for deinterlacing 480i. That kind of gave me some, you know, I don't know how robust the OSSC might be compared to what the FrameMeister can do, and I don't know if the frame buffer is part of the FPGA in the FrameMeister or what, but it kind of gave me some hope that there could, like, I feel like I listened to Bob at RetroRGB's interview with Marks several weeks ago, and Bob was asking about, you know, like 4X and 5X, and Marcus was clearly a little confused by what he meant by 5X, because that would sound a little weird if you're thinking in terms of simply, if you're thinking of terms of line, what would multiplying by 5 even be?
Is it a quince? Quintupling?
Quintupling? I think that'd be it. And that would be like some super weird resolution. But what I like in the FrameMeister is, sure, you could line quadruple, essentially, like, not strictly speaking, but you could make it an integer scale with work, or if you download the Pixel Purist profile. But then you could also do 5X, which cuts off the top and bottom. But if I'm looking at that same game image on my HDTV in the 5X mode, and I look at it on my PVM, I'm like, well, it's basically cutting off almost the exact same area in the 5X mode. So that doesn't bother me at all. So I would love it if the OSSC were in any way capable of scaling 5 times, but keeping the resolution 1080p, and just the extra stuff goes off the edges. But I have no idea if you need a frame buffer to do that kind of scaling.
Neither have I.
like to keep, you know what I mean? Like to scale 5 times, but keep it within a 1080p screen.
Well, theoretically, you can do anything as long as you can work on an individual scan line. So, I mean, maybe you could write some code to say, right, we'll throw away the
scan lines. Yeah.
And I might be talking complete nonsense there, but yeah. Maybe you'd be surprised what you can do with just a scan line. I mean, have you seen the emulators that sort of filter out the, you know, the composite pseudo blur transparency effect?
I've probably seen it to a little extent. A friend of mine has been big into emulator stuff lately and has come and shown me some stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of a neat effect. I don't know if you showed me that one, though.
In a nutshell, you get, like, the spotlights and streaks of rage in your waterfalls in Sonic, and that it's just like a mesh, isn't it? And when you put it through composite, the composite blurs it and it looks like a pseudo-transparency.
Right, right.
But if you play it in RGB, people are like, oh, no, that looks terrible. So what this emulator filter did was sort of pull that apart and make it look like a proper transparency.
Right. And
Mark's actually said, well, yeah, we could do that on the OSSC because you only need one row of pixels to do that. So one scan.
Interesting. Line.
So things like emulator style filters could be put in there, although a lot of people see that as sacrilege probably.
that's an interesting idea. I mean, if the OSSC could basically be like, you could tell it to basically be like, you know, use these scan lines but throw away the, you know, the top four and the bottom four and make them 5 times as big.
Yeah,
but then whether you could do that within a 1080p space on the OSSC, I who knows? Not me.
You'd have to ask Marcus, I suppose. Yeah, yeah, I really couldn't say. But yeah, this is quite surprising what he seems to think can be done without having a full frame buffer.
Or without doing an upgrade to the hardware at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you want to go into 4K and things like that, it's going to need new hardware. But
yeah,
you know,
but do you think like is the main bottleneck there is just the raw processing power that that the OSSC has? Do you think it would in theory be possible to do 240p to 4K with no frame buffer?
Not on this hardware because there's not bandwidth. But
if the bandwidth existed, there's no reason.
Oh yeah, that will happen one day if the 4K line 8 times or whatever.
Octupler.
This is 3:20 here. Come on, give me a break.
I'm thinking about it too. it's the what would 7 would be like septupler, right?
Oh, or whatever fits into the resolution, I suppose. Is what
you think. Yeah, I mean that resolution probably wouldn't make a lot of
ask me to do maths at this time.
Yeah, but it's so interesting to think like what all could come out of it, and Fudo was saying, you know, he thinks that a big potential advantage Marx could have over Microsoft long term is that Marx so far has seemed to be more receptive to listening to what people are interested in and implementing those features.
Yeah, he's much more involved in the community.
Yeah, and we've set up forums, we've set up wikis. You know, there's no language barrier between us and most of the users, so. And when we use this stuff ourselves.
Right.
You understand it.
Do you have any idea where, like, his kind of interest in doing this even came from? Was it just more of like, hey, I'm going to try to do this, and it. There was obviously, interest in it?
Curiosity was a part of it, and probably like me, you thought, well, you know, it looks like Micom's after moving away from line doublers, whereas a lot of people want line doublers,
right,
for the reasons we said before. And so what would it be like if you got the newest technology and built a line doubler? Because obviously film and TV aren't interested in line doubling, because line doubling gives you flickery deinterlacing, so they're not going to develop a line doubler for broadcast, right, or anything like that. So somebody's got to do it in this community.
Do you think anyone might make a sort of DVD-O-esque thing, like a community-driven thing that would like work nicely with the OSSC and be easier to get your hands on, or at least cheaper to get your hands on than going to get one of the good DVD-Os?
That's like playing Parodius now.
It's the PS1, Japanese PS1 version.
Right. Well, never say never. All the things that this community keeps coming out with, it's staggering, isn't it? So,
I mean, I would almost imagine it as being, because, like, I can't imagine someone being like, I'm going to make a good 480p scaler, because 240p is, kind of king in this realm. But maybe someone might make something that is specifically designed to be a partner with the OSSC. Almost like a frame buffer add-on to it,
That certainly would be cool. Yeah, it certainly would be cool. And I'd get one if there was such a thing existed.
I actually was doing some tests, and I was convinced for a brief while that using the OSSC to do the line doubling, and then using the FrameMeister to get an integer scale double that, looked cleaner than the FrameMeister doing a 4x scale on its own. But then I took a closer look. I'm like, nah. But it's actually surprising how close they are.
One of the things you can do on the advanced timing tweaker now is like an almost pixel perfect integer scale for like the Saturn, and that's like you're optimized. You've got your line triple 240 optimal mode. On the OSSC, you go into that and you can do it perfectly for the Saturn. So, great, let's try this. And honestly, I didn't like it. It was just that little bit too sharp, but. Like the N64 has the HDMI as the integer scale, isn't it?
Yeah.
And some people went crazy for that, and I was just thinking, it's like a bad emulator to me.
I'm nuts about it. It was kind of crazy. My friend I was telling you has been testing a lot of emulator stuff lately. But correct me if I'm using the wrong term here. Is it low level emulation with like the more intensive, or is that high level? It's high level or low level? The one that's like
cycle accurate.
Yes. That. I guess there's like some N64 stuff that's kind of in early stages on that.
And
he was showing that to me. It was kind of crazy because he said the only reason you're like impressed by this is because of this weird rabbit hole you've ended up going down, and like that I've done stuff like tested the anti-aliasing hack on an HDMI N64 with integer scaling and D-blur combined. And what blew my mind was like he was like they were kind of crashing, the games were kind of crashing and stuff because it's pretty early, but it was still like when it was working, like it looked exactly like what I saw when I was testing the anti-aliasing hack with D-blur off. It's like that is what it was looking like, and the pixels were dead on sharp. Like I'd never seen N64 emulation look quite like that.
Reason to emulate a platform like that is to just say, you know, you're not going for accuracy. Let's just upscale this and see what it would look like.
You don't want
like.
To see the pixels for platform. I've really got into the sharp pixel look for N64. But I'll admit, I really like the default retro mode on the Ultra HDMI. Like, I feel like it's kind of got this curved edge look the scant lines that kind of has that is really accurate, I think, to how PVMs generally look. And I think that looks really great. And it's even capable of just sort of doing like, you know, when the screen goes darker or brighter, it's got like this artificial sort of bloom expansion. So the Ultra HDMI does like some really cool tricks with stuff like that. But I still generally stick to the pixel look, in part, because, you know, that's how it's going to look best in captures. You can't expect to really use scan lines if you're capturing video, because it's not going to scale well the way that, you know, YouTube or how someone's phone scales it or whatever, you know.
And that goes back again to your point about you don't always have your scan lines switched on because you don't remember them, because you didn't have that kind of display, and who had a PVM?
Right.
And they were a kid, yeah.
Right. So, like, you know, I look at it, and I'm like, you know, hey, it looks really cool, and I love getting those, you know, tight shots of the scan lines. I think it looks really cool, but it's like for me, it's not something that is like, I feel like I'm missing something if I don't have it turned on. Like, I like modern display technology because, you know, unless you get your face like right up to it, it's like it's solid color, you know. And I like, you know, looking at sprites, game sprites, and it's just, you know, Mario's pants are, you know, a solid red or solid blue or whatever, you know, whatever the color is for whatever, it's just, it's a solid color. And I like that. But, you know, hey, I like scan lines too. Don't get me wrong. I think they're really cool, but they're just not an integral requirement for me.
Yeah, and it's each to their own, isn't it? So, certainly these days there's no right or wrong. And who wouldn't want to see, like, Ocarina of Time in 1080p? Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Then you might want to play it on the original hardware with composite, dare I say, sometime, just for the historical purposes.
Because that's
how it would be played back in the day.
This boss is wrecking you.
I know. Well, yeah. I think that I just gotta outlast it. Like, I gotta wait till I get to the end here. But no, it's just...
Well, I mean, that's the problem with shmups, right? Like, you know, you've lost your stuff.
Yeah. I know people are like, man, you stink, Corey. Well, you know, I'm doing what I can. I'm going to switch games. Now I'm going to switch to Mind Triple versus Ripback.
Okay. Of course, that'll be hard to tell. Tell the overall effect on the stream, I think. But I think it just goes to show that, you know, they're really close. Triple two versus Frame Meister. And I think it's important that, you know, we show a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but from time to time we show shots off screen, because that's a more true representation of what you're getting with a scaler. You know, where, you know, yeah, we capture, do a lot of direct capture, and then we scale it up and post. But, you know, sometimes you'll get some compression artifacts, even though, you know, we use the highest bit rate we can. And, you know, it's not going to look, you know, it's going to show flaws that may not actually be there on your TV. if you scale it up too much. So it's good to keep in mind, like, this is what it looks like on your TV. I was going to talk about some particular shot, but in the video, but I'm trying to blank on what it was. But
I suppose with the OSSC, you are more at the mercy of your TV scaler, because you've normally got to go from the 480p or the 720p.
Right, and you know, and I can't really get a without a line quadruple mode, which I guess still wouldn't be 1080p anyway. I don't have a way right now of like really getting what my baseline lag on my TV is, because I have no like way of doing a true lag test on something that's outputting 1080p natively.
Corey's rage quit, I think.
But yeah, that 960p, that's an interesting mode. But like you kind of said, not sure if I'm super into doing that for 480p stuff, like, because the 480p generation is trying so hard to be HD. You know,
good choice again.
This game's gonna wreck me.
You're
I'm really good at the Genesis one. I'm not very good at this one.
No, I don't remember what I was talking about now.
Some bad. Don't expect me to. It's 3 in the morning. you're saying about the lag on the baseline mining.
I don't have a good way to really test that. Like, as far as I could tell, like, I was getting around 4.5 frames of lag on my TV, which I honestly had no idea it was that bad. I'm not like the most susceptible to lag in the world, but
still seems quite a bit. I mean, I got one of the little handheld testers, and
what's kind of interesting is seeing these two games side by side. You can see like when the screen like goes black and comes back up, like you do see like about one frame of lag between the two, like one disappears. Like one.
Yeah, but like I say, since you're recording on different capture cards,
right? It could be any number of things.
Yeah, there could be all kinds of factors at play. So I wouldn't use what you're seeing here as accurate.
He calibrated them both the same as well.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But I think the important thing to remember is that, you know, the OSSC has no inherent lag, but yes, there will be lag.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think there's a tiny number of PC monitors that have like 1 or 2 milliseconds, but generally, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the lag on the Frameizer has never bothered me.
No.
The other thing as well is a lot of people say, oh, it's 480p, so your scaler's going to be adding loads of extra lag that the Frameizer wouldn't do, but having tested that out on a bunch of TVs with the handheld tester, which is 720p, there never seems to be a difference between 720p and 1080p in terms of lag. It always seems to be deinterlacing picture processing that adds it rather than scaling.
Mm.
So if people are worried about that, then it's not usually the case in my experience.
Yeah, I mean, I did find that on my TV, scaling 480p with the OSSC was about a frame faster than the Frameizer.
Hmm. Yeah, but you found out that your TV was slower than you expected.
Yeah, yeah.
It is.
But on my TV, you know, technically speaking, the OSSC should be about a frame and a half faster than the Frameizer, but whether that ends up being true or not all depends on how your display handles particular resolutions. So it's just it's,
right. But usually if it's progressive, there isn't a difference in lag.
Right.
It's usually interlace. I can't speak for every TV, but that's certainly what my experiments have shown.
Are you familiar with the... I've kind of been looking at it lately, but I have no concept of how reliable it might be. Are you familiar with this website? It's called displaylag.com.
Familiar with it in as much as I've been on it, yeah, but I don't know who's behind it.
Yeah, or if it's... how trustworthy it might be, but yeah, I've kind of been looking at it lately because I mean, gosh, I can't afford a 4K TV, but like we keep talking like, man,
we know we're
like,
gonna have to get into it eventually
because people want to know so much about it, but I almost feel like until there's like a 4K Framemeister or something, you know, it's like, I don't know how worth it it is. Like we were looking on the whenever we release an RGB video, we like to go to the NeoGAF scalers and PVMs thread because someone's always going to link our video in there, so we like to see what people say. And the conversation that was going on in that thread recently, just prior to us releasing the video, a lot of people were saying that 4K TVs have very disappointing scalers built into them. Huh. Now, that's just, you know, that's that seems to be very anecdotal evidence, but
I've tested one. My girlfriend's dad just decided he was going to buy a new TV and just went and picked any old one, and it turned out it was a 4K one. So I was like, hey, can I test this? I was honestly expecting it to look bad, but it was kind of okay. And it accepted Lime Triple and snares and everything. So I don't know what the lag was, though, because I didn't have my tester with it. But yeah, it was a lot better than I'd been led to believe. I've seen some of the horror stories and shots of like super super blurry scaling.
Would you say that Line Triple looked better on it than on a 1080p screen?
Not necessarily better than a 1080p screen, but not necessarily worse either in that instance.
Man, I'm like I am not good at this. If you can't shoot up and down in this one, I'm like garbage.
It's been so long since I've played it.
You can double jump.
Yeah, but still, it's like the double jump is tough because you like really commit to it.
Yeah.
I like that you can change direction in air because of it. But I mean, we know that I'm okay at the Genesis. I proved it on stream.
We know you're pretty good at the Genesis version, Corey. We can never take that away from you. we'll always know because you proved it to us on stream.
Yeah. I did the hard loop too.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even beaten the game in years.
Have you you've played the PSP version, right?
Yeah, I have it. It's pretty good.
It's like a totally original game, right?
Right.
Yeah. Played it on an emulator. It was kind of buggy, but it was kind of cool too.
Yeah, it's neat. It's like you have to find things in every level so you can kind of go back. You can backtrack.
I need to get a PSP Go so I can get some big screen PSP action.
it's fun. I mean, not that you have to have a Go to do it, but you know, it's got the controller support is the nice thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was frustrated because I have to use my PSP Go on the charging dock. And for some reason, I don't have a DualShock 3 synced up to it right now, and my PSP 3000 was dead, and I couldn't find a charger for it, and so I had to play the PSP Go, like, from the cubbyhole where it is, and, like, with my hands on it, without it removing it from the dock, and that was how I had to get that shot. I wanted that direct capture shot in Persona 3, and it was the most uncomfortable and awkward thing, and I was, like, really tired that day, and, you know, I've been editing the video, like, you know, 3 weeks straight at that point. I was just so mad about how I had to be playing that PSP. I was just like the second to last day of editing on that video, I was just in a really bad mood.
Well, you said that, like, even with this one, you were like, when you're towards the end of it, you're like, I never want to see an OSSC again.
Yeah. Oh, gee, thanks, Ken.
No, I'm okay with it. Look, see, here it is.
It's just cool. Funny, like, in the moment. It's like, because just making the episode, it went on for so long.
Yeah,
it's these days. You should have had the XRGB3. Now, that was a bitch.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, that's why we were glad that it's kind of like, what's the point really thinking about the XRGB3 that much anymore, you know, when you've got something like the OSSC. And I feel like that kind of gave us some renewed direction and clarity for how to approach this video. It's like, we don't have to talk about everything. We just have to talk about, like, we just have to, like, hit on, like, the main ranges of devices that people are realistically going to be looking at. And then it also was helpful when I realized, like, you know, like, let's talk about devices that people realistically going to get their hands on, you know, and rather than, you know, talk about, you know, something that's going to be, like, you know, $800 or $1,000 on eBay, you know. Just direct them and say, hey, you know, there's lots and lots and lots of video scalers out there, and if you really want to know more about them, go to Hazard City, but, you know, we're going to talk about these.
Right, and even your sort of really high-end, like your Lumigens.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't really do that great with video game material, because they've been designed all the time for movies.
Right.
So, you know, they're not taking into account anything like lag or fast deinterlacing. Right. They are just aimed at video files who want to watch movies. So.
Yeah.
So you're not really missing much.
Yeah, I mean, it's all that stuff is, like, really interesting, but not necessarily what we need to get into. So I think it's, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if someone wants to start up their SCART collection, you know, using one of the generic scalers or the GBS 8200, and, you know, just kind of, like, get their feet wet, and maybe they'll say, you know what, this is fine, this is good enough. Because it, you know, the bottom line is, you get that SCART signal to your TV, even if it's using not the greatest scaler in the world, or I say SCART signal, RGB signal through SCART. You get that to your TV, like, you're still winning, you know. You're beating composite.
So, you banish composite, which is always a noble goal.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, it's so interesting looking, like, really up close.
Sorry, just saw a comment flash up there. What do your other halves think of you and all this stuff? Mine's actually pretty cool about it, because she's a gamer as well, but she doesn't really understand my obsession with putting scan lines on everything.
So this was something I got at Goodwill a couple of weeks ago for pretty cheap, and I've never really actually played it. This is
something Konami coming up here.
Yeah.
Someone asked about the audio on the thing as well. I mentioned that in the newsletter. Borty designed, like, an audio add-on board to inject analog audio into the HDMI stream, so you didn't need a separate receiver or what have you. we're getting some prototypes of those in probably next week. So,
wow.
But hopefully that will be an option in the future as well.
So wait, that's it, that goes, it carries over with the HDMI or?
Yeah, it needs soldering on, but once it's installed, and you need a custom firmware as well, which sometimes means it's a revision or two behind. Uh-huh. But once that's in, you can then have audio and video over the DVI HDMI output.
Yeah, a lot of people are really gonna need that. Like, I mean, even for my setup, I'm struggling to think how I would cleanly integrate that in with the way that I currently do things. But I can definitely figure it out. So Biker Mice from Mars, I definitely know this name, but I don't know anything about it. It's apparently a cartoon. So it's based on a cartoon.
I remember the cartoon.
It's kind of in Konami's like Bucky O'Hare phase.
Right.
Yeah.
It looks it's kind of like Rock and Roll Racing, like the isometric kind of look. I don't know how to. I've never played it. I'm just gonna kind of figure it out. Oh, cool. I can.
Do you think you would have picked this up at Goodwill if it wasn't called Biker Mice from Mars?
Well, I saw the Konami on it. I was like, oh, you know, like, how bad can it be?
How bad can it be? You know, Konami, they've been good games.
There was a ripoff cartoon of this in the UK called Avenger Penguins.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's a real thing?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, Avenger Penguins.
That's amazing.
A biker penguin gang.
Oh, whoa. Okay. So A is like a speed boost. Oh, jeez. I can shoot stars out.
You don't see games like this like in the 16-bit era much. Like the isometric driving sort
of
thing.
Well, I think of... like Rock and Roll Racing.
Well, I think RC Pro-Am.
Oh, I can see. Yeah, I can imagine that.
ATR on the Amiga. That was good.
The turning doesn't look very good.
I don't know. I think it could be probably a lot of fun if you get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you're struggling with those corners, though.
Well, it's the first time I played it.
You're terrible at this game, Corey. You're awful.
I don't know. I might do okay. I'm catching up. I'm in first place.
Oh, wow. I don't see how you're going to get there because you're way behind on where I'm at. Oh, you've got like a
gun. Like it shoots stars out of it.
He just pulled into the lead, hasn't he?
Yeah. I won!
I hexed you. Oh no, you won.
Still way
oh,
behind on mine. I need to jump ahead to. I need to click the live button.
We have like. We play a lot of Trackmania here on like one of our friends over. You ever seen that game?
They
just came out
PS4
for the PS4.
Yeah.
And they make me sit with my hand over my mouth for saying anything because I'll be like, oh, they stunned brilliantly. And then they'll just career straight off the track. Every time.
I can go to shop. Let's see. Welcome to Last Chance. I can upgrade my vehicle. I'm gonna put a V8 in it. You haven't enough cash. You haven't got enough cash.
The FrameMeister does get updates, but it's pretty infrequent. The last update was. What was it? It was several months ago, but it was a very, very, very minor update. It didn't really do anything significant at all. The last major update was like maybe a year and a half ago when they added saving and loading profiles. And I think there were another few semi-significant updates in that. Does Marx have like a general time frame of how frequently he wants to do firmware updates, or is it kind of just they're done when they're done?
Yeah, I guess it's more that, but he seems to be working on it quite a bit, and he sent me this update I've just talked about with the advanced timing tweaker and the improvements on the snares, and I said, well, they improved it on one TV, didn't on another. And he was like, oh, well, I'll have something else for you to try for the Panasonic TV in a few days. So.
I could imagine, you know, with a lot of people being as excited about it as they are, that's like a lot of motivation for them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and you if know, it's something you're interested in as well, then, you know, it benefits you as well as other people, isn't it? So.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, something that I very much imagine we're going to do, you know, originally this was going to be, what would it be, RGB 305? Where is that where we're at, 305?
Is 305, yeah, that's, I think we should.
That will be, 305 will be the next one, which will, which, by the way, will be the AVS Nintendo.
Yeah, which, tell people about it in the chat, because I think some people probably didn't see your...
I'll talk about when we're winding down. If this was going to be 305, but we realized like this is really not like, you know, an advanced or special topic necessarily. Like this video is about information that people need when they're. For a lot of people, it's something information they need getting into RGB, especially with the big focus on the cheaper generic scalers and the GBS and that kind of stuff. You know, of course, the OSSC, you know, could be both a beginner and advanced sort of option.
Right.
At the same time, but with so much focus, it's like. Really, like, kind of explain to people like what you need to know and understand about video scaling, and so we're like, well, you know what, this should actually be a 100 level video, and that kind of like I feel really good about that. Like, it feels like it really kind of rounds out the 100 series,
right?
And now it's not like 101 is our scalar video, which it kind of was, but. You know, it's so old and is only so focused on the FrameMeister. Like, I feel a lot better about this kind of being our premier scalar video. So, but I say all that to say, I foresee the OSSC getting many 300 level videos
right.
over the years. Say what?
Cool. Great, excellent.
The thing is, like, you know, let's say that the firmware update comes where, you know, SNES is going to work on basically any TV. Like, even if it's only like a 6 or 7 minute video, like that is information that we need to put out there in video form. I feel like that is a significant. Update on the video that we have already released, and we need to let people know when major changes like that happen, or you know if you know the line quadrupling mode turns out to be really awesome or something like that. You know, is because you know yes, the OSSC you know has some shortcomings that right now where it's like well it's not really shortcomings so much as like. I have no idea whether this is going to work with my TV. Once that kind of stuff gets ironed out and it sounds like he's sort of thinking about the firmware in such a way where he is going to be able to come up with solutions to those problems. And you know, as potentially the hardware changes. I mean, you know, I can't say how soon those videos would be, but I do think, you know, once a number of important features get rolled out into what on earth did you turn into?
I don't know, some little running guy. I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird looking.
A potato? But yeah, kind of like a potato. Maybe.
Kind of did look like a potato,
yeah. You know, like once there's a some several good firmware updates, like we'll. You know, definitely look into, you know, covering the OSSC, you know, again in the future in dedicated videos. I think that that's important for people to know that the project, you know, that the project is, you know, is living up to its promise of, you know, improvements and features and ongoing development as that happens. So, you know, we're excited by that.
Right. And I mean, I asked you like the other day about, like, you know, how much space does he have to, like, add stuff? And you said he has quite a bit of room, like, overhead left to, like, really...
Yeah, yeah. By that I meant sort of the bandwidth of the FPGA and the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
There should be enough to make line quadruple work. Whether you could go much above that on the current design, I don't know. The other thing... Would you say, you know, I've no idea if this works in my TV. If you do buy one and it doesn't work out for you, we will refund you as well. So, because I appreciate that we can't just go out and buy a bunch of TVs and test it because we're only, you know, a small business.
Right. And I mean, something like that, it kind of just says, you know, then you can give people a heads up about that specific TV, you know, at the very least, you know.
Yeah, there's a Google Docs spreadsheet where people have listed TVs that work, and there's a forum thread as well. And it's very community driven, which is great.
Something that popped in my mind. I was starting to ask about this earlier, and then I think I got sidetracked. So there's the optimized modes for line triple mode.
Right.
Which are kind of interesting, and I couldn't quite wrap my head around why I think it might have been, I don't know if it was Fudo, but someone was explaining to me why that works on certain screens and not others, and the way I was understanding it was it had something to do with the color space or the color space bandwidth, and I'm trying to wrap my head around, and maybe I misunderstood, but I'm trying to wrap my head around why color has anything to do with how sharply it can show the pixel, the vertical edges specifically.
I think you've just misunderstood.
Yeah, I probably have. Like, what determines whether that works with a display or not? I was pretty confused.
Well, what you're trying to do with those modes, as I understand it, is you're trying to sample the scan line as closely as possible to the console's native resolution. So be that sort of like 320 by 241, say, for example, they might have an extra line or something. So you're, again, it's like your line triple mode where you're creating a slightly off spec resolution, where some TVs will just be like, yeah, no problem, I'll display that, where others are like,
that's, you know, I that's why I didn't go like super in depth on that section, because it's like, that's kind of confusing. But I ended up just using the generic 4x3, which, you know, it actually wasn't that long ago that I learned that the FrameMeister, you know, even though the whole image looks really sharp, it's technically only giving you sharp horizontal edges, and that the vertical edges are just, you know, in really good focus.
Right.
But they're technically soft, you know, interpolated edges, and that's why you can have smooth non-integer scrolling and stuff like that. But I just never realized it because it looks that sharp. And really, I feel the same way about the generic 4x3 mode on the OSSC. Like, it looks like it's like so sharp. Like, yes, when I do have that optimized mode on, if I'm testing in a scenario where I can see that, it's like, okay, yeah, I can see how that's like really sharp. But it's like, you know, and for everyday play, like, I don't really see that as being like a requirement to have that on or anything.
Well, if you like the sort of look of the N64 HDMI with the integer scale,
yeah,
then those modes are really for you.
Yeah,
it's
hard to like get the aspect right on them and stuff like that.
You have to manually tune in the phase as well to get rid of all the jitter. And they do come with some quite heavy caveats, really, but they're there if people want to use them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool option. What's funny is you can, like, change the sampling phase is what I think it's called in the menu.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I guess it's just, like, shifting just a bit, like, where it's sampling. That's why you get sort of these flickering pixels when it's not tuned in quite right. I remember I was capturing something, and I was like, oh, I got the sampling phase dialed in. I'm not seeing any flickering. And then I looked more closely, and I saw, like, somewhere in the middle of the screen, I was still getting flickering, but I wasn't getting flickering anywhere else.
Yeah. You will sometimes get a little bit of jitter on some sources. To that, I'll say, you know, try eliminating all the noise on the source on a FrameMeister, or try and get a noise-free picture on an XRGB3. It just isn't going to happen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, people have to realize.
Yeah, you will get a tiny, tiny bit if you really look for it. And on the 240p test suite, when you do the color bleed check, that often shows it up.
Mm.
But you don't normally notice it when you're playing.
Yeah. I think that's the important thing to remember at the end of the day. Like, there's certain things, like, you know, even just playing with the OSSC and 240p mode, like, if you're, like, not just tinkering with it and you're just, like, sitting down to really play a game for real, like, you know, 480p, like, it's pretty darn good.
Yeah,
like,
you're out of the sort of realm of the interlacing 240p, which is what you want to be. So that's the big thing to get over. That's the main hump, isn't it? You want to get rid of that.
Yeah, which is, like, the big issue with the generic ones. I think we kind of try when we were, like, writing it. One of the things we said is we don't want to shortchange the really cheap generic ones at all. Like, we wanted to, you know, because some people, that might be all they're looking for.
Right. Like, that, I think a reason that a lot of people were anticipating this episode is because they wanted to see our analysis of those cheapest options.
Right.
Now, I feel like we were honest about, you know, here are the very real issues you need to be aware of if you're choosing this device. But you know what? At the end of the day, you're still getting something better than composite, and the lag might not bother you that bad, and you know, maybe it's all right. I mean, it's you know, like the title I put for one of the factoids was passable entry level RGB. You know, and you know, it's not amazing, but it certainly works. And I really do think for a lot of people that's at least a good starting point.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, something funny I was noticing when I was getting some of those off-screen shots of the HD Retrovision cables. You know, I can't figure out what it is. Like, if you were just to plug in composite video, like, you can actually kind of see this in the Zelda. I've got that one Zelda 2 shot where I do that transition from the Zelda cartoon to the the Zelda.
It's very how to be esque.
I bought that DVD just to do that shot. It is.
Are you serious?
Well, it was like $5.
Excuse me, princess.
It was like $5, and like, I was like, you know, like, I was thinking of, like, I was trying to think, like, what, like, because I wanted to show, like, video scaled on my TV, but I was trying to think, like, I was like, but I want it to be, like, something video gamey. I don't want to just, like, have some shot of something. But, like, so I started looking on Amazon, and I'm like, this is $5. I should own this. Like, why don't I own this? So I bought it bought the DVD just for that. But yeah, so in that Zelda 2 shot that's right after that, I mean, it's like an extremely short shot. But there's like a woman that walks by Link, and you sort of can see, like, if you watch closely, you can see how, like, it's almost like time and space is warping around has walked.
Yes.
Because it's like the scaler is trying to de-interlace and make sense of what it's seen and stuff like that. But then the crazy thing is you plug in the HD retrovision cables and you don't get, or at least not in any noticeable capacity on with my TV scaler, it doesn't have errors like that where it, and so I don't know what it's interesting because you would think, well, if the scaler is trying to do this wonky interpretation with composite video, you'd think it would be doing that with a higher quality component signal too, but it's not. And so I don't really know what it is about the just, I guess it just goes to show how purely messy composite is, because it's making the TV scaler misinterpret the signal even worse, or at least that's what it looks like it's doing to me. Does that make sense at all? Am I making no sense?
Yeah, I think so. Your composite has to go through, you have to pull the signal apart and go through the comb filtering, and
right. So
maybe a trade-off side effect of that.
Yeah, so it, you know, you've got that warping, but the exact same scaler does a good job with a high quality signal. It doesn't have that warping effect. And I saw that same kind of effect in some of the footage that Corey got, like the, you know, that. I want to say that Simon's Quest clip that you got with the generic scaler, kind of, that was a good shot. Did you notice how I cut up your audio on that section?
I didn't.
in the video, you say, in the video, you say, how's it go? I'm going to have to bring up the script now.
Stretch.
Oh gosh, it's like coming on, or it is after 4 o'clock for
you.
Yeah,
well, I'm gonna.
Yeah, it kind of is.
I'm just gonna go back to the two of us.
I want to bring up your script because I thought I was really proud of how it cut, how the audio cut, because I wanted to tweak it, but I didn't want you to have to redo it. There we go. So in the script, when you're talking about that composite and S video to SCART converter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. It does support sync on green as well, whereas the FrameMeister doesn't.
Right. Yep. That's true. Oh, I mean, that's like a good. That's pretty specific to, I mean, in terms of like stuff I have to the PS2.
Yeah, it's about the only console that does sync on green, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. So you say when you're about the S video to SCART, you say, you know, don't expect any sort of quality increase. Genesis, in the video, you say composite still looks the worst.
Oh.
Or you say, composite still looks the worst, but and you record it saying Genesis composite still looks the worst.
Right, because I just wanted to say, you know, Genesis composite, like,
because Genesis composite is infamously bad, but the reason I decided to change it to where you just say composite still looks the worst,
uh-huh,
was because I was like, well, why would you be using Genesis composite with this box anyway? Because you could just use RGB with it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I know you gave me the example of it, but I was like, well, you gave me that Simon's Quest.
Mm-hmm.
So I instead of saying Genesis composite looks worse, you just say composite looks the worst.
Okay. Well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, so I just thought it made more sense because it's like, well, you know, hey, here's NES. This is like realistically what you're going to be getting with NES mm-hmm. using that method. So I thought that made sense because you would not use Genesis with that device in theory.
Right. It's true. I mean, I don't even know what I'm going to do with that thing. It's good. I think it's very good, you know, especially like that and like having, you know, it's good for us to have all these different things so that we can show them in future episodes if we need to.
I'm excited to learn more about the GBS A200. And honestly, I think we could do a 300 level on the custom firmware that's kind of being worked on for that, because some of that sounds interesting. Someone in our Patreon chat, our we have a Discord chat room for Patreon subscribers. Someone was saying in there that apparently the custom GBS 8200 firmware is going to allow for, I think, 480p to 240p downscaling, which could be potentially really useful.
Yeah.
Especially for stuff like, all of those PS2 compilations that, you know, might be running in 480i, like Taito Legends and stuff like that.
That could be
huge if that works well. And it should also fix the uneven vertical spacing and stuff like that. Like, the GBS could maybe be really cool. I'm really interested to see where that custom firmware goes. But
was that a 480i to 240p conversion you're talking about?
Well, I think.
Well, it'd have to be.
I think what the guy said. Yeah, you're right. I think what the guy said was 480p to 240p, but. If they could do 480i in any capacity to 240, that would be interesting. I don't. You probably have a much better concept than I do. The technical challenges of making interlace downscale to 240, if that's even possible realistically.
You can do it with just an Extron interface, but it only works on a CRT. Mm. You've got to overlay the force the fields to overlay, or do like an alternating scan line kind of thing. Mm. Of which there is an option in the OSSC to do, but I've not played with it that option very much, to be honest.
Do you think the OSSC could be capable of downscaling?
That goes back to what I said before. It will probably be a separate unit that goes backwards and does like a
because
the Extron Emotia and things like that are getting quite rare now as well. So
right,
mm-hmm. even though it's more of an edge case.
Yeah,
I think it would be nice to have a unit that was readily available that could do it.
Yeah. That I never get to talk. It's good. It's good. It's good that I.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's. I mean, you're playing the games, and that's why we like to have guests on the stream.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just found in Bob's OSSC this Samsung micro SD card. I need to ask him if it's his or mine. I think it's mine.
Yeah, I mean.
When did Bob get his?
Say what?
Did Bob get his from me?
I guess so. I assume he did.
God, that's where that got to then. I've been looking for that all over the place.
Been looking for what?
The SD card.
Wait.
I thought I must have left it in one of the. Yeah.
I actually do think it's mine.
Oh, sorry.
Wait a minute, is it?
It would be funny if it was like the same one. That's when you used to.
Is it a SanDisk one?
No,
it's Samsung.
No.
Oh, it's not mine then.
Try. I don't know if it would be yours because I don't think you updated the firmware on that one on Bob.
No, I.
Oh, right.
You're right.
You updated
right.
the firmware on the. On the prototype.
Prototype. You're right. So this must be Bob's. Okay, I'm going to put it back in here.
I know I've sent someone out a free SD card, though.
It's important to note, I think, that, you know, I had to buy a SD card that, because it doesn't accept the SDHC ones.
It only right.
On that as well. Yeah, that is it.
You're right. This must be Bob's card, though. But I need to check the other one to make sure Because I don't have very many of them.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious if I all of a sudden, I, hey, here in America is this random SD card that you've been looking for.
What's the better option? Game Boy Player on HDTV, PAL GameCube plus RGB plus OSSC, or GC Video Analog Mod, OSSC, or GC Video Digital? I don't know.
There's one
shot of me doing line triple with the
Metroid Zero mission.
Yeah, the Metroid Zero mission is triple line tripled 240p Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, I mean, all of those honestly are good options. I caution about the GC Video Digital if you're specifically looking for 240p.
Right.
On the Game Boy Player, because it works with my TV. It's not anything special. It's not like going to be like super sharp 240p on my TV. Doesn't work with the FrameMeister, which you know, is at least as of the firmwares of the time that I was able to test it. I don't know how that would work. Like, I wonder if you could convert the digital GC Video to SDI for a PVM, and if so, can you do 240p over SDI on a PVM? Would that work, or would that blow something up?
Should work. Yeah, it should work. Just use a cheapy HDMI to VGA
SDI.
VGA to SDI.
Yeah, I really would like to test that if I ever had a PVM with SDI.
That was the whole 240p pass through was left in for people who wanted to convert back to analog.
Oh, right.
Because obviously then there's not very much that will display 240p over HDMI.
Right.
And so, speaking of which, you've got Matt, and I know we've kept you pretty late as it is, but you've got some modding services through your site. You don't do the modding yourself, but you partner with someone who does the installation and has been building a pretty serious upgrade to the GameCube HDMI mod. But that's like all kind of managed through you, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yes.
Right. Yeah. I do all the website stuff and customer complaints and make up excuses when it's been delayed another couple of weeks.
Well, but that, I mean, the new version of the HDMI looks so cool because it keeps the digital port intact and has that little HDMI slit above it.
Yeah, but at least the old one worked.
Yeah, but you know it and you were like first out the gate with it, but it's like that's like so cool that the digital port is kept intact, and I believe you said that it works at the same time.
Yes.
So you could be outputting, you know, if you were some crazy person who had both component cables and a HDMI mod, like,
but
you.
That's good. I mean, you do that with I mean, that's like one of the good things.
I do it with N64.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that is like so awesome to have that kind of flexibility like that. I think that is a huge competitive advantage to be able to at least offer the option that, hey, you can do both of these at the same time. That's like a huge upgrade. So
yeah,
We thought we'd actually crack that, and then we put one back together and put Soul Calibur on, and there was some like speckled sparklies, whatever you want to call them, in the background. So we're fairly sure that's down to some interference it's picking up from somewhere. So it's a case of getting the whole thing out and wrapping it in tin foil or something and putting it back. That won't be the final version, that way. Once we figure that out, then yeah, we can start shipping. But again, it's. You know, it's hobbyists in the bedrooms or wherever making this, so you've got to expect these delays.
Where did your interest in all this begin?
In all of it?
Yeah.
Like, what was kinda... like gaming?
No, I mean, not gaming, just like, you know, upscalers and...
Video scaling stuff, I guess.
Oh, right. I bought a plasma TV when I got my first job, writing Fruit Machines slots, you know, like the gambly things with the reels. Mm-hmm. It's late, so. You don't call them Fruit Machines, do you?
No. No, slot machines.
Slot machines, right. So I bought it, I plugged the GameCube in with composite, and I was like, what the heck is this? What have I just dropped 2 months' salary on? So, and just went from there, because, you know, composite on a CRT is acceptable.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But when you move to a HDTV, it really takes a nosedive. Yeah.
I mean, I remember even when I got my HD CRT, you know, one of the first things I tested out was Mario 1 on my NES, and I'm like, what are these crawly edges around things, you know? Like, I knew composite looked worse, but I also knew that composite didn't look that way on regular TVs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a surprise, isn't it, when you plug this composite system into a CRT, you're like, hang on a minute, this doesn't look that bad.
No, but as Corey said, either you thought, oh, well, this is fine, or how can I make this better?
It's true.
We're lucky that we had SCART in this country anyway, so by the time I was using the Amiga, I already had RGB.
It's such an interesting divide how, you know, you all had RGB, but we had the correct speed. No one had the best of both worlds.
Until now.
Until now. So it's so interesting how it's evolved, because like at first, like I noticed that so much of the sources on this kind of information was European, and I thought, well, maybe that's because they have looked more into this stuff, because they're like, you know, trying to figure out, you know, okay, how can I play in 60 hertz? But then it's kind of like, but on the flip side, they already knew all about RGB, so they never had to think about that deeply. You just had it. And to us, we're like, what? What is this?
I think I read somewhere it was down to the French. It was like a French standard, and it sort of spread throughout the EU. And
Yeah, I think... but doesn't France use, like, CCAM or something? Or
slightly different standard. Yeah, they might do, actually.
It's like... I don't know. I understand that much about CCAM, but I think Russia uses CCAM or something like that. But yeah, I don't know how like it's compatible with. I want to say CCAM. Is CCAM and PAL like compatible with each other?
I think it's France that uses it.
Yeah, I don't know. But
it's too late. I can't remember.
Yeah, I know that SCART was established by a French consortium of some kind.
Yeah. And then that's sort of how it spread around Europe, but for some reason never got to Europe.
And then for some reason, the exact same connector went to Japan, and they're like, oh, well, let's just put the wires in different places.
There is no explaining that, is there? There is no logical explanation for that whatsoever.
And I have really no idea of how widespread that really was on Japanese TVs, because people don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah, it's true.
I'll have to ask him. Oh, I've forgotten his name now. It's too late. It's gone. I can't remember. One of the guys that lives out there and collects the X68K stuff.
Well, hopefully you don't have too difficult of a Monday ahead of you.
No, I've put time aside for this evening.
Well, that's good. But we really appreciate having you on. It's been fun. It's been a long time coming getting you on here.
Yeah. Oh,
thanks for having me.
Try really quick. Do you want to talk about the AVS really quick?
Oh yeah. So, I did a Periscope. For this, just before the stream. Actually, mainly because I did not expect it to come in this box. Like, you know, this like retail looking box. And I was like, wow, like, you know, we're you know, we're kind of used to mods and homebrew type devices, and I did not expect this to be almost sort of a retail-esque presented device. So I was like, well, you know, I don't think of myself as the unboxing sort, but I'll do an unboxing Periscope, see how it goes. And so yeah, this is the AVS Nintendo. It's just called the AVS, but it's got a cartridge slot in the back, front loader style for NES, and a top loader cartridge slot for Famicom. Even has Famicom expansion port. I'm not sure if it plays FDS. I mean, FDS doesn't go through there, but I don't know if it plays FDS through here. I bet it does. But so far, initial impressions are it's pretty cool. And, you know, this is just very early at a glance. But it's not clone hardware. It's not original hardware. It's not an emulation box. It's an NES on an FPGA. You know, it's an FPGA basically being programmed to act like an NES with some variations. You know, it can do HDMI output, and it's got some settings. You can tweak the aspect ratio a little bit. So we're going to do our next number is 305, right? Going to do RGB 305. Primarily focusing on this thing.
Yeah, that's going to be soon. I mean, we'd like to get it out before the actual thing is
before released. It comes out, before it ships. Like, it's shipping to people who pre-ordered them mid-September, I believe. Yeah. They also sent along with it a homebrew game called AVS Launch Series. This one is called 12 Seconds. They've got like 7 of these homebrew games. And I guess, like, this is actually a really, really authentic feeling cartridge. And I guess they're kind of also publishing sort of homebrew NES games as well. So they're kind of making this into a thing, I guess. But yeah. So we'll be looking at this soon. A lot of people have wanted us to look at this, and I'm glad that we're going to have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I mean, they contacted us like on like last Wednesday and said, "Would you like to do this?" And
we were like, "Oh yeah, please."
And it was on your doorstep when you got back, got home this morning.
Yeah. So.
So looks kind of 80s, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like this because, like. The analog NT, like, it looks cool, but it doesn't have that NES vibe to it. And this, like, this feels like it's capturing the spirit of the NES. So yeah, pretty cool. It's gonna be fun to play around with this a little bit more, but it'll be a few weeks away. We're hoping we can get our hands on. And, you know, if anyone in the chat can offer, we're hoping to get our hands again on a high-def NES or analog NT with HDMI output with
the newest firmware.
With the newest firmware, because the newest firmware should have fixed interpolation, which was a broken feature when we used it, which I think is supposed to sort of do some horizontal smoothing so you can have non-jittery scrolling at non-integer scales. Right. And we would love to sort of revisit that as part of, you know, comparing, you know, these different HDMI NES options. So yeah, if anyone has one of those, you know, we're willing to cover shipping costs and stuff like that. If you wouldn't mind us having it for like 2 weeks or something, just drop us a Twitter DM or something. But anyway, so yeah, coming soon. Yeah. Corey's probably going to be working on limited run in the meantime and maybe get that out.
Yeah, I think that'll be out probably in 2 weeks. If not, then this will probably be out before that. I mean, I'm hopeful for a limited run.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. All right.
Alrighty.
Thanks again,
I remember
again,
the guy's name. I remember the guy's name is Super Deadite. If you like 68K stuff and obscure Japanese games, check his channel out.
Who is it?
Super Deadite.
Super Deadite?
Deadite as an Evil Dead?
I guess.
Oh, if you have not seen Evil Dead, you need to see Evil Dead.
Is that the one where they like freeze dry the zombies?
No, it's the
brains. And...
It's the one. It's the one.
Oh, you're
the
thinking
guy
of. You're thinking of. Return of the Living Dead.
It's his girlfriend, isn't it? And he like goes to reanimate her. And
Army of Darkness is the guy with the chainsaw arm and the shotgun.
Right, so it's not that one.
Good movie. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, check his channel out. It's good.
Okay. Definitely. And if you're interested in the OSSC, you should get on the mailing list.
Yeah, because that's your only way. That's your only hope of getting one anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Is it right on the front page of videogameperfection.com? Is it like really?
Good question. Let me have a quick look.
To be honest, I think it's buried a little bit. I think you have to go. You might want to make it more prominent.
You can go. Oh yeah, actually, yeah, that's probably a good idea. Actually, yeah.
You go to the store, and then I think it's consoles and accessories.
If you just put in videogameperfection.com/newsletter, that'll get you straight there.
Okay.
Okay.
I should put it more prominently as well, actually.
But how you get to the OSSC on videogameperfection.com, you go to store, then consoles and accessories, and then you see open source scan converter. And then on there is a link to the mailing list, but you can also look on that page for information.
Absolutely. And links to my totally non-biased review as well.
I mean, you mentioned the Super Nintendo issue, you know, so
yeah. Well, I just played a bunch of Super Nintendo and had no problems.
Well, I mean, I had Super Nintendo problems because it didn't work well with my TV, but right. it's good to know that there can be systems with issues right now. But like I say, as those issues get ironed out, you know, we want to revisit the OSSC and the 300 level series.
Oh
so.
Yeah.
Cool.
Alrighty.
Alright, that's going to do it for this week. We will see everybody next week.
Good night.
Good morning.